Welcome to Penance and Purgatory. I'm Abigail.
And I'm Wesley.
And this is the podcast where you can't tell whether we're in hell or not.
You sound very enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, I do. I tried really hard on that one. To sound like a normal person.
What's that like?
Who is actually able to, like, express feeling through words. And, like, voice tones.
Words are overrated.
Yeah, they are. All right. Do we have any announcements?
Merry Christmas.
Oh, yeah, this is coming out on Christmas. Happy holidays. I hope you're celebrating it with your family, if you like your family. I hope you're celebrating it with your friends and actual loved ones, if you don't like your family. Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, winter solstice. Yule, whatever it is you do or don't celebrate. If you don't celebrate anything, just have a great day. Do we have any other announcements?
I don't think so.
I don't either. Maybe we'll try and get in another one before New Year's, but I'm guessing that our next episode will be next year.
Probably.
We'll see. We might surprise you guys.
Maybe.
We'll see. Alright. What is your weird-ass question of the day?
So I was going through some old notes on my phone.
Okay, I'm thinking of the things that are, like, in my notes in my phone, and they're, like, podcast episode ideas, spooky fun fact list, like, my grandmother's garage code.
Why do you have that written in your phone?
Because I can't remember it. The label of, like, grandma's garage door code is written in binary code.
Why?
Because I didn't want anyone looking at it to know that that's what it was.
What? How would they know where your grandma was? Did it have her address next to it?
No. I was just being crazy, is the bottom line. Like, half of the things in my notes are written in binary code because I was like, well, if someone steals my phone, they'd have all the information to my life. But that was probably just being completely and utterly irrational.
Probably. But, so I found this quote of you, and I'm hoping you can maybe add context to it.
Okay. The quote is, come see me when you can eat a dinner roll through a feeding tube. Abigail. It did actually just occur to me where what this quote is from. So, I do work at a nursing home. And at a nursing home, we take care of a lot of different patients with a lot of different needs. Some of them are on a feeding tube, which means that basically everything we give them has to be, like,
liquid.
The consistency of, like, liquid, between liquid and baby food. Like, it has to be very specific, or it will just get stuck in there, and we will have to send that person out to the hospital to completely swap out the feeding tube.
Yeah.
Because it's just not safe to have it be clogged for any amount of time. So, we will have the kitchen bring us the bottles of this feeding tube stuff at different meal times. And instead of bringing us, like, the bottle of the material that we would put in the feeding tube, they brought the patient, like, an actual meal on a plate that was, like, a piece of ham, like, mashed potatoes, and a dinner roll. And even though, like, on their lunch ticket it says, like, this person eats, like, this specific thing and cannot eat anything else but this specific thing. And obviously it used the, like, specific medical terms, but I would just rather explain it to you like this. And so I was just kind of really annoyed by that because, like, why would they just not read the thing and give this patient something that they can't eat? And so the nurse is going to have to, like, take it back to the kitchen and be like, yo, the hell is this? give me the feeding tube stuff so I can actually, like, feed this patient who's hungry now. And so my comment was, come see me when you can eat a roll with a feeding tube.
All right. Good times.
Yeah. I'm kind of an asshole sometimes.
Sometimes.
I'm nice sometimes. You like me.
So today...
Rude!
Do you remember when we had talked about the various whales?
The whack-ass whale drawings? Yes.
Yes, do you remember where they were from?
Norway?
Was it Norway?
I have no clue, that was my guess.
I think it was Iceland?
You didn't write it down?
No, because I had it earlier and now I don't remember. Yay.
Good job.
So, well, we're going to Iceland today.
Okay.
For our Christmas, I decided to do something Yule related.
Okay.
So, I saved the story of Gryla.
That's a very buff name.
Well, so, description of her varies. Some say she has horns and fangs. I saw 13 to 15 tails.
That's definitely some hentai shit.
Oh dear. And a wart-covered nose. Other claims she's just a hideous large woman. She's a giantess, but some say she looks more like an ogre.
Okay.
So while descriptions vary of her appearance, her motives are always the same, that she is hungry, and her favorite thing to eat, children.
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 I really had to work hard not to say om nom nom for this one. I figured, like, that would be a bit too fucked.
So, there's an old poem about Gryla that describes her as having 15 tails, and on each tail she has 100 balloons. And then every balloon can contain 20 children.
What?
That's how many children that she had kidnapped.
Why were they kept in balloons?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Which, I did the math, and if it was 15, that was 30,000 children.
That's a lot of balloons. That would be expensive.
Also, where were they to have balloons in the 17th century?
They could technically make them out of pig intestines.
Ew. could they get, like, helium to fill it up with?
No, they can heal it up. They can fill it up by blowing into it.
Well, I imagine, for ominous effect, the floating balloon children's going to be behind her.
Ew.
So, according to a 2021 census, there are 19,292 people in Iceland who are 19 or under, which is shy of the 30,000, unless she's going all around to other countries to steal children.
So basically, she has all the children ever.
And also, for reference, their current population is 344,524.
That kind of sounds awesome, honestly.
Not a lot of people?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, like, how many people per square mile that is.
It's got to be less than Denver.
Oh, definitely. So, some stories said that she had the innate ability to sense whether children were naughty throughout the year. But another source that she heard whispers about children's behavior throughout the year, which I don't like that.
Yeah, that just reminds me that there's always, like, at church, it's, like, mops. Which is, like, a group of moms and old grandmas and stuff like that. And they basically just get together to gossip, like... It's supposed to be, like, a support group for moms, but it's literally just gossip. So that just reminds me of groups like that.
Hmm.
Maybe the MOPS groups or her spy network.
Probably. So when winter sets in, she goes out to gather the naughty children. So before the 17th century, she would just basically waltz into town and eat them whenever she wanted. But as Christianity spread more...
Gross.
It changed to her just coming down around Christmas.
Yeah, probably because they would have burned her at the fucking stake for existing and being slightly different than Catholicism.
So... So, she was so hungry and didn't eat throughout the year that she'd been known to even eat her husband's. But she's now on her third, apparently.
I'm surprised she hasn't gone through more.
So her husband's a troll. I'm not even going to try to say his name. But he was described as browbeaten to the point of being pathetic.
So he's, like, infinitely whipped.
Yes. And overfearing what happened to her previous husband, he just... he exerts no influence over her evil tendencies. Like, just tendencies.
You know, some people have the tendency to do, like... I don't know. Lean on their right leg more than their left, and some people just have evil tendencies.
So her hunger towards misbehaved children was insatiable, that's not a word. And it said that she found no shortage of her favorite crop, which, how misbehaved were Iceland's children?
Kids are all fuckers, honestly. Like, even the ones who don't, like, technically break the rules are still little shits.
Yes. Does Corin ever listen to these?
No.
Oh, fuck. I'm gonna say something about him. But... Oh, yeah, because he said that he follows all the rules to a T.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. And he's still a little shit. Well, he's a really tall shit, but...
He's a really tall shit. He's taller than me.
I think he's, like, 6'3". Tall. He's like a foot and almost a half taller than me.
That's not that hard.
Rude!
So she collects the children in a sack and then cooks them in a pot and makes a giant stew out of them until she can go back down next winter.
I'm assuming she then like freezes the stew and just has like 100 freezers of kid stew. Let's see, am I filling Billy or Miranda tonight?
Just a mountain-sized refrigerator? Imagine how much her electricity bill would be for that.
We're thinking way too much into this.
I mean, well, if you dig deep into the mountain, it's got to be cold.
Yeah.
You just got to dig down where it's like, well, I guess it doesn't really get freezing underground. But you just get down where it can at least be, like, refrigerated.
Yeah.
It's a mountain-sized refrigerator.
Just thinking, like, of her writing, like, cute little stickers of, like, the kids' names on them and, like... I just took the story to Jeffrey Dahmer level.
All right.
And now it's fucked.
All right. So, Gryla, she seems terrible enough as it is, right?
Yeah.
Well, she doesn't work alone. She has a partner. So.
Of course she does.
Unfortunately for the children of Iceland, hold on. Gotta think. So, her companion was, said the Christmas cat is what the source that I found, but a lot of other places I've heard is her described the Yule cat.
Okay,
I'm cool. Called the Yule Cat.
It's a cat. I like cats.
But, so, for the cat, he didn't eat those who were misbehaved. He would also go after children who did not get new clothes to wear for Christmas.
Oh, cat, why? You're just poor.
You're just poor.
Cat, please.
It's like the honey badger. Honey badger don't give a shit. So Gryla is arguably one of the most evil figures in Icelandic folklore. And it, to this day, is still told as a horror story to children.
I can see why. It would fucking work.
The reason, one of the possible reasons that it's so aggressive is that you're more likely to die in the winters in Iceland.
I believe that.
I don't know. I did not research the weather patterns of Iceland. Apparently it was very dangerous, and many disobedient children who went out in the dark and snow never came back. And also, the story of the Yule Cat who ate children who didn't get new clothes was likely created to ensure that everyone would finish their weaving, knitting, and sewing by the middle of winter.
That's smart, actually.
But Gryla also had 13 children.
Of course she did.
Known as the Yule Lads.
The Yule Lads.
Yes.
That's so European.
So,
like, we're very much living in the United States. And so, no one uses the word lads.
No.
And so it's just very amusing to us.
So, now they're seen as gentle pranksters and not scary. But imagine what the 13 descendants of child-eating monster would do to a town back in the day.
Yeah, I'd be like, fuck that.
So, another interesting thing about Gryla and the Yule Lads is the number 13. So we all know how 13 is also seen as bad luck and all that fun jazz.
Yeah, that's why you're afraid of it.
I'm not afraid of 13. It's just my least favorite number.
We've talked about this.
Yes, we have.
And Wes is afraid of the number 13.
Yeah, so it's not surprising that a monster would have 13 tails, 13 children that stay for 13 days each.
Oh.
So the one comes on December 12th. Okay. Come in 13 days leading up to Christmas, and they each stay for 13 days.
Okay.
So there's only one day where they're all active at the same time.
Okay.
So I'm reading the English translation of these because there's no way I could read this.
Yeah.
So the first one is Sheepcoat Claude.
And we thought that our original names were bad.
Oh, it gets worse. So he comes in on December 12th and apparently tries to, quote, suckle the ewes in the farmer's sheep shed. But it was difficult for him because his legs were stiff as wood. So he's kind of like suck on sheep, I think, is what it was saying. I don't understand.
What the fuck?
And then on December 13th, at Gully Gawk.
Gully Gawk.
So he gets his name from the fact that he likes to hide in gullies for a chance to sneak into a barn and slurp the foam off the fresh milk when the farmer isn't paying attention.
What?
So, and then there's Stubby, also known as Pan Scraper or Pot Scraper. It gets conflicting with December 16th. So, Stubby is the smallest one of them, and he used that to his advantage to hide and snatch bits of food left over from the frying pan.
Oh.
So, he's also called Pot Scraper or Pot Licker. So then December 15th is Spoon Licker.
What?
So he sneaks into houses to lick the wooden spoons used to scrape the pots and pans.
What the fuck does that mean?
It means that there's not a lot of nutrients and he on the spoons, and he's actually quite malnourished. So, and then for 16, this one's actually called Pot Scraper. Like, just like the 14, so there's confusion there.
Okay.
So, he sneaks into houses to snatch pots that haven't been washed yet, so he can lick the food remains from the inside of the pots.
So these guys, like, aren't, like, I'm they're going like to nuisance. Eat.
No, they're nuisances.
Yeah, they're not, like, I'm gonna eat your children level bad. They're just, like, I'm gonna do tiny things that's just gonna make you, like, swear and then move on with your life.
Okay, man, they all stay for 13 days. So you have to deal with this shit for 13 days as they're getting more and more.
Yeah.
So on December 17th is bowl liquor. So people in Iceland's past apparently ate from wooden bowls.
Okay. That makes sense.
Some source said they had a hinged lids that were sometimes just put under the bed after a midnight snack.
Okay.
So he hides under the bed, and when someone puts their bowl on the floor, he'll grab that and lick it clean.
Why is that a curse? Like, wouldn't that be like, I would be throwing all of my bowls underneath my bed because it's like, ooh, cleaning.
Oh, gosh. So this one is what I'm going to guess to be your favorite. On December 18th is a door slammer. On December 18th, there's no peace and quiet to be had since that's when door slammer arrives.
He's like the angsty teenager.
He makes a lot of noise, and his favorite activity is slamming doors, making sure no one in the household gets a good night's sleep. So, and then on December 19th is Skier Gobbler. So, Skier is something, it's like something similar to yogurt.
Okay.
So, he makes his way down on December 19th, and apparently is obsessed with Skier. Like me with Arizona green tea.
Oh my god.
And so said that he liked it so much he'll sneak into the pantry and eat all this year until he howls with indigestion. It's like steals your yogurt.
And just like screams. When he has an upset stomach because he ate too much.
So, and then December 20th is Sausage Swiper. So, as you might have guessed, he loves sausages.
Yes.
And he'll sit up in the rafters of your house waiting for a good chance to steal some. Then on December 21st is Window Peeper.
I feel like these are getting more and more sexual.
Wait for it. So, when Window Peeper visits, so he's not as greedy as his brothers. While he can still scare you, he's likely just be in the window looking for something to steal.
Oh, so he's not just a voyeur, he's a thief too.
I mean, they all are.
Okay.
Basically. Except for maybe this one. This one, on December 22nd, is Doorway Sniffer.
The fuck?
So it said you can spot him from miles away due to his huge nose. Several sources said that.
I'm just picturing, like, a gigantic nose and then, like, a minuscule body.
So, there's a smell of Christmas cookies and traditional Icelandic leaf bread.
Okay.
Whatever that is. I didn't look it up. Is what attracts him when you're not looking, and he'll accept to steal some. So, and then this one, on December 23rd, is a meat hook.
Meat hook.
So, he, too, loves meat.
Okay.
So climb to your roof and lower a long hook down the chimney. Try to snag a leg of smoked lamb meat hanging from the rafters, or a piece of smoked lamb from the pot. So the next, and then on December 24th, the last one we have is Candle Beggar, also known as Candle Stealer, depending on the translation.
What?
So candles used to be the brightest lights that people had.
Yes.
So, wait, hold on, I'm confused. So, candle stealer or candle beggar would follow children so he could steal and eat their candles.
Why? Like, I would get it if he was like, I really like light, so I'm gonna light, like, 15 candles in my room at a time.
Well.
But no, he just, like, steals them and then fucking eats them.
Well, it's not like wax. Back then, candles were made out of animal fat.
Still.
I mean, that's some sort of nutrients, more than wax.
It's still whack.
No, it's wax.
I fucking knew you were gonna say that.
Right here now. I told Abigail that I had something for her to read.
Oh boy.
So, I found a poem about the Yule Lads.
The Yule Lads.
Yeah, so that's the name of the Yule Lads. Just go ahead and read the poetry.
Oh, come on.
I know how much you like poetry.
The first of them was Sheep Coat Clod. He came stiff as wood to prey upon the farmer's sheep as far as he could. The second was Gully Gawk, gray his head and mean. He snuck into the cow barn from his craggy ravine. Stubby was the third called, a stunted little man who watched for every chance to whisk off a pan. The fourth was Spoonlicker, like spindle he was thin. He felt himself in clover when the cook wasn't in. Potlicker, the fifth one, was a funny sort of chap. When kids were giving scrapings, he'd come to the door and tap. Bulllicker, the sixth one, was shockingly ill-bred. From underneath the bedsteads, he stuck his ugly head. The seventh was Door Slammer, a sorry vulgar chap, when people in the twilight would take a little nap. Skeer Gobbler, the eighth, was an awful stupid bloke. He lambasted the skeer tub till the lid on it broke. The ninth was Sausage Swiper, a shifty pilferer. He climbed up to the rafters and raided food from there. The tenth was Window Peeper, a weird little twit who stepped up to the window and stole a peek through it. 11th was Door Sniffer, adultish lad and gross. He never got a cold, yet had a huge sensitive nose. Metal Hook, the 12th one, his talent would display as soon as he arrived on St. Thorlax Day. The 13th was Candle Beggar. 'Twas cold, I believe, if he was not the last of the lot on Christmas Eve. That was very difficult.
Yes, it was. So if you want to visit the Yule Lads, their parents, or the Christmas Cat, in Iceland, you can head to the north of the country to Dimmuborgir. Sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. A natural stone labyrinth of lava formations, columns, and caves. Dimmuborgir means dark city and is believed to be an area that connects the earth to the underworld.
It's time for
everyone's favorite segment.
Spooky.
So you're familiar with what a bust is, right? Like a sculpture of someone's head?
Yes.
So there's something similar to that. It's called a herm. It's like the bust got like the head and like the shoulders and everything, and then it's just a pillar of stone. And then there's the genitals. And then a stone pillar.
So it doesn't include, like, the legs or the feet or anything?
No, it's just the head, sometimes the shoulders, and the genitals. And it's typically of the god Hermes, which is why it's called a herm.
Did people use it, or...?
I don't know. I decided to not look into that.
That's very strange.
Yes.
And that has been everyone's... spooky fun fact.
We can redo it later if we have to.
I'm just very confused by the spooky fun fact.
It's unsettling. It's the head, stone, and junk, and then stone to the ground.
Like, I feel like if you were gonna have this, you probably couldn't buy it or make it without everyone in town knowing about it.
Well, it's for the gods, so it doesn't matter. It's not gay if it's for Jesus.
But my question is, like, did people use it as a sex toy? And did their neighbors know that?
I didn't look into that, so I don't know.
I know. They're just the things that make Abigail ask questions.
A lot of things make you ask questions.
Most things make me ask questions.
Yes.
Yeah. I know. Including today's topic.
Is it festive?
It's not festive.
Alright, so what is your story today?
So today, we are continuing our unintentional two-part series.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
When we last left off, we were discussing the missing persons cases of Rachel Garten, Lorene Ron, and Denise Andenault. So these three women went missing in very close proximity to each other on March 22nd, 1980, April 26th, 1980, and June 8th, 1980, respectively. They all went missing within a very small area of New Hampshire. It was within, like, 30 miles of each other. Like, that's how small it was. They all look pretty similar, disappeared without a trace, and were never found.
Well, how big is New Hampshire?
I didn't look into that.
Well, why not?
I didn't think the geographical size of New Hampshire would be relevant.
Well, I need to know, for this state specifically, 30-mile radius is big or not? You still use Google Chrome?
Yes.
Yeah, this last week I had I was sitting in my car in a drive-thru, and I opened up my phone. I had opened to Google, and I talked to myself a lot. And I stopped to say something in German, and Google Chrome was like, translate from German to English.
New Hampshire has 9,349 square miles.
So then what percentage is a 30-mile radius of that?
It's 0.36% of New Hampshire.
So it's not that big of an area.
No, it's not. That's my point.
I didn't know. I'm unfamiliar with New Hampshire. I've never been there.
It doesn't matter. Like, on the continent, it's a very small area.
Oh, on the continent, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's all that really matters, is that it's land that you can access, technically on foot.
Cool.
So their stories still remain unsolved, and their fates remain unspoken. In all three cases, police work was minimal. It took years for them to be seen, even as missing persons, and Denise Andenault is still not on the New Hampshire missing persons list. She is instead listed as deceased, despite the lack of evidence to indicate that she is actually so. The police in the separate counties for each case all state today that the cases are still active, but there has been almost nothing new since they went missing in 1980. While looking into these cases, I ran into another similar case, Denise Bowden. She went missing in 1981 from the same area with her daughter. There was one clear suspect in her case, a man named Terry Peter Rasmussen. With Terry Peter Rasmussen comes more cases, since he was a serial killer. He went under many names during his life, to the point where the police and media gave him the nickname of the Chameleon. With a serial killer, my first instinct would be to cover his whole life and try to understand him. But honestly, he doesn't fucking deserve it. Those he killed deserve to have their stories told more than Rasmussen does. So today, we're going to talk about his victims and what happened to them. Rasmussen is definitely one of those people who make me wish that I believed in hell.
I feel like I've heard of this guy at some point. The nickname sounds familiar.
Yeah. I hadn't before this, actually.
Hmm.
So, first we're going to talk about the Bear Brook murders. Sometime in July of 1985, an 11-year-old boy and some of his friends were playing hide-and-seek in some woods near a trailer park in Bear Brook State Park in Allenstown, New Hampshire. They found an old, rusted 55-gallon steel barrel in the middle of the woods, just, like, chilling there.
All right. Sounds like something you find in the middle of a forest.
So the children, being curious children, decided to see what was in it.
I would not want to open that barrel. I probably feel like I'd get tetanus by looking at it wrong.
But you're a hypochondriac.
I'm not that much of a hypochondriac.
Most 11-year-old boys would definitely yeet the lid off of that to look inside.
Well, do I look like an 11-year-old boy to you?
No, you look like an 11-year-old lesbian to me.
Damn, okay.
It's okay, I look like a 40-year-old butch. So, when one of the children peeled open the lid, a horrifying smell wafted out. One of the kids pushed the barrel over, because kids don't make sense, and then they ran away, because they were like, fuck the stinky barrel.
Fuck the stinky barrel?
Like, there are some smells that, like, you instinctually smell, and you're like, nope, not touching that, not dealing with it, not living with it. We're just not playing that game. So, November 10th, 1985, a hunter found the same barrel.
How long after the children?
4 months.
Oh, okay. So the children just, like, didn't tell their parents?
No.
They not see, there was a body in it, right?
Yes.
Did they not see the body, like, spill out?
No. They just smelled the terrible smell and were like, nope.
Oh.
And they ran away scared.
All right. They're scared of the smell. They're scared of the stinky barrel.
They're 11.
When I was 11, I don't think I'd be scared of a stinky barrel.
At 11, you were basically raising yourself. And at 11, you were afraid of the number 13.
Was I?
And non-virgins. And non-Christian music.
I'm 13. I don't remember being 13 literally at all. I don't remember any of it.
And you used to run around the church screaming like a chicken with your head cut off.
I vaguely remember that.
Like a fucking hooligan.
I was a hooligan. Not really, though, in the grand scheme of things.
No. You were just a mild annoyance, honestly.
Yeah.
So, the hunter looked into the barrel, and he saw what appeared to be bones.
Okay.
So, he called the police immediately.
Yes, as he should.
Inside the barrel were the remains of an adult woman and a young female child. The woman was around 26 or 27, and the child was around 8 to 10 years old.
Okay.
They had both died of blunt force trauma to the head and had clearly been beaten to death. Their remains had also been dismembered. And it would be a long time before these two would have their identities back. 15 years later, on June 8th, 2000, around when you were born.
They're not supposed to know what my birthday is.
You were born in 2000.
Okay.
Was all I was saying. I don't fucking remember what month your birthday is.
Oh, well, that's reassuring.
It's in my calendar and I have a reminder, but I don't remember.
I remember when yours is. I remember when very few people's birthdays are.
I don't remember when anyone's birthday is, including mine.
But I don't know, birthday's not that important to me, so.
My birthday is definitely not important to me. So, June 8th, 2000, another barrel was found, which was essentially the same as the first. Inside this barrel were the remains of a 3 to 4 year old girl and a 2 to 3 year old girl. They had also been beaten to death, and their bodies had been taken apart in the same way. Their souls would also have to wait to have their names back, thanks to police work, genetics, and a research librarian named Rebecca Heath.
Wait, did police not entirely fuck up the story?
They didn't.
That's surprising.
So, on June 6th, 2019, mother, Marlise Elizabeth Honeychurch, and her two children, Marie Elizabeth Vaughn and Sarah Lynn McWaters, were finally identified as three of the four victims. So to understand the full story, we have to understand Marlise's life. Marlise Elizabeth Honeychurch was born in 1954. She married twice and had a child with each husband. She was known to be quirky, bubbly, and fun. And we'll probably put a picture of her in our sources page. She's adorable, honestly. She loved her daughters more than anything else. She was 24 on Thanksgiving of 1978 when she introduced her new boyfriend to her parents in La Puente, California. So her parents were somewhat confused by the fact that this boyfriend was 35 at the time.
How old was she?
More than 10 years older than her.
Oh.
He would have been 11 years older than her, to be precise.
Oh, interesting.
Which is whack.
Yeah?
Like, especially if it's she's 24 and he's 35. Like, I get it if it's like, oh, well, they're 60 and they're 70. That, like, that's a pretty insignificant difference in terms of life experience, but, like, there's a very big difference between a 24-year-old and a 35-year-old.
Yes.
So, this thing of them being very different in age made the parents nervous, and so them telling her that this made them nervous quickly became an argument, and Marlise left with her daughters and boyfriend. Her parents would never see her again.
Oh.
Because this boyfriend was Terry Peter Rasmussen.
Rasputin?
No. Although I did name my notes rah-rah Rasmussen. Because I'm a fucking dork.
I don't know if I've listened to that entire song.
I haven't either. So, some of you more detail-oriented listeners might have noticed the age difference between when Marlise disappeared and the age of her remains. So when Marlise disappeared, she was 24 years old. When she died, she was 26 or 27. When they disappeared, Marie Elizabeth Vaughn was 7. When she died, she was 8 to 10 years old. Sarah Lynn McWaters was 1 when she disappeared, and then 2 to 3 years old at death. So from the math, at least, they seem to have all been alive for around the same amount of time after disappearing. They were dead for 4 to 5 years before their bodies were discovered. And I can't know for sure whether they were killed days apart or if their bodies were originally somewhere else first. That would be something that the forensics team would need to find, and with them being found in 1985 and 2000, it's probably unlikely that any new information on that will ever be known. Especially since the case is solved, to some degree.
Mm.
So, if you calculate the average difference between the age of disappearance and death, it seems that Marlise and her daughters were alive for around 2 years after leaving that Thanksgiving. There isn't any clue where they were during that time.
Hmm.
Or where Rasmussen was.
Sketchy.
Yeah. As for the identity of the other child, her name is still unknown. DNA testing has shown that Rasmussen is her biological father, but she isn't related to Marlise or her daughters.
Hmm.
So based on the timeline of where Rasmussen was and genealogy that's been done based off of her DNA, the child's mother likely lived in Pearl River County, Mississippi. Police think that it's possible her mother is yet another victim of Rasmussen that just hasn't been found yet. And maybe one day that child and her mother will have their names back. Next victims we have to talk about are Denise and Lisa Bowden. So in 1986, a 5-year-old girl was abandoned at an RV park in Cypress, California. The man staying there was listed as Gordon Jensen, and he had been working as a handyman and electrician in the RV park. Jensen had told others that the 5-year-old girl was his daughter, named Lisa Jensen. At some point in 1986, he left Lisa with neighbors. Those neighbors eventually had to notify authorities and put her up for adoption, since they couldn't afford to take care of her anymore.
How long were they caring for her?
I don't have an answer on that, honestly. Oh, okay. It never said. So, once those neighbors told the adoption agency what had happened, the police were brought in almost immediately. So, they took fingerprints from the RV park and where Lisa and her supposed father were living. And they came back as belonging to a man named Curtis Kimball. Curtis Kimball had been arrested in 1985 for drunk driving, and Lisa had actually been in the car with him.
Okay.
Under a different name.
Oh.
So the officer who arrested him had began to ask questions about Lisa at the time. He kept questioning whether Lisa was indeed Kimball's daughter. They just didn't think something was right because they didn't look like each other. They didn't look like they were attached to each other. Lisa just kind of seemed, like, confused by the whole thing. The officer just felt like something's off here. Mm-hmm. And so the officer believes that Kimball only actually agreed to plead guilty to the drunk driving incident when he heard that officer wanted to run a paternity test to determine if Lisa was his daughter.
Sketchy.
Yeah. So Kimball served less than 2 years for abandoning Lisa, and then he was released in October of 1990.
Okay.
So Curtis Kimball, Gordon Jensen, and many other aliases were a collection of names belonging to one man, Terry Peter Rasmussen. Officers discovered decades later, through DNA, who Lisa really was, Lisa Bowden. 6 months old, Lisa Bowden and her mother Denise Bowden went missing shortly after Thanksgiving of 1981. Their family had been told that Denise was moving with her boyfriend Robert T. Evans for financial reasons. They didn't think much of it for a while. Even after Lisa Bowden was found, Denise never has. She could technically still be alive, but it's probably pretty unlikely. She would have been 63 years old if she was still alive. If she's not, then she was probably another victim of Rasmussen. So next we have to talk about Yoon-Soon Jun. Yoon-Soon Jun was a chemist in California, and she was the woman who ultimately brought down Terry Peter Rasmussen. She was in her mid-40s when she introduced her family to her boyfriend, Larry Vanner. Her family didn't really like Larry Vanner, since he was generally rude and lazy. Despite their misgivings, Yoon-Soon married him in an unofficial ceremony in 2001. In June of 2002, Yoon-Soon's family was no longer able to contact her. Vanner would make tons of excuses to her family and friends as to why she was too busy to answer phone calls or attend appointments or gatherings, and his story would change constantly. One day it would be like, oh, she's busy taking care of this. Another day it would be like, oh, well, she doesn't like to talk to you anymore. And then another day it would be like, oh, well, she's taking care of her mother. It would just change constantly, and none of it would be verifiable by other people. So one of Yoon-Soon's friends decided to go to the police and told them about the situation and just how, like, sketchville it was. So the police agreed that it was really weird, and they searched Vanner's house. While doing so, they found something strange. Strange is an understatement, honestly. In the crawl space, there was a massive pile of cat litter.
Okay. You said it's a part of a basement?
In the crawl space.
Oh.
Which is typically in a basement.
Yeah, and don't they usually have, like, dirt floors?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it could make sense, like, as a leak or something. I don't know.
We'll get there.
Or maybe he's got a cat he keeps in there.
So, it was 5 feet long and 2 feet high.
Maybe that's where his cat liked to pee.
There was even a fucking axe next to it.
Maybe that cat's got some tree trunk-sized dumps.
So, Vanner didn't have a cat or anything. So, the police thought that it was really, really weird. So that they had to get a search warrant to search through the cat litter.
Okay.
Because technically, a search warrant only gives you permission to search things that are in plain sight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't give you permission to search through, like, a specific filing cabinet unless that's included in the search warrant specifically. So they had to go back to a judge and tell the judge about this whack-ass pile of cat litter and be like, yo, can we please search this cat litter pile because there was a fucking axe next to it and this guy doesn't even have a cat. Please.
Maybe he's about to get a cat and that's where he wants it to shit.
And so the police made whatever poor rookie was the newest search through the litter.
Okay.
And first they found a mummified foot that had attached to a flip-flop because of the cat litter.
Wait, so basically a flip-flop was glued to a mummified foot because of cat litter.
Basically, cat litter takes the moisture out of things. And so with a decomposing body, it would suck the moisture out of it. And so the body would leak fluids out that would make the flip-flop stick to it. And when the cat litter would dry it, the flip-flop would become, like, cemented to the foot.
Interesting. What'd they do with the foot? They just keep it on a shelf? Make it an ornament on the Christmas tree?
No.
You don't want a foot ornament?
No. This was the body of Yoon Soon Jin. The body had been basically mummified entirely by the cat litter, and she had died of blunt force trauma. Unsurprisingly, a man who matched Vanner's description was seen buying 10 bags of cat litter from a nearby pet store.
Well, how big were the bags?
I'm sure he had to go to more than one place to get the cat litter.
But what size was the bag?
It doesn't say.
Depending on the size, they're like the 5-pound bag. That's not that weird.
He doesn't have a cat.
Maybe he's planning on getting a cat.
Wes, there was a body in it. That's not normal cat buying behavior.
Maybe he had a problem. He's trying to solve it with cats. That's what I did.
There better not be any bodies in your cat's litter.
Not anymore.
That was a joke, NSA. So, Vanner was arrested for the murder of Yoon Soon Jun. He pleaded guilty and was arrested and was sentenced to 15 years to life. He died in December of 2010 of natural causes. Fucker. I was not happy. So he only served, like, 7 years in prison. I wish he had to suffer a lot longer than that. So it wasn't until 2017 that his true identity was discovered, and he was revealed to be Terry Peter Rasmussen. So up until that point, the police had thought that the person that they had in jail and that had died in prison was Vanner.
Did they not, like, background check him?
they did, but they, like, they could tell that the trail ended, but they couldn't figure out, like, who he was before.
So, sus.
Yes. So, once Vanner was known to be Rasmussen, other pieces just kind of fell into place. Other cases became connected, and the true web of his evil became pretty clear. And since he was already dead, Rasmussen didn't have to pay a damn second for all those lives. So let's talk about some possible other victims. We're going to start with the San Joaquin County Jane Doe, who was found in 1995. So a woman between the ages of 29 and 45 was found inside a refrigerator on the side of the road in California. The fridge had been tied shut with a rope. She was killed by a blow to the head around a year before she was found.
Wait, so is this refrigerator just chilling there for a year?
I don't know.
All right, then.
But she had been dead for at least a year. We don't know if she was in the refrigerator that entire year.
So, after holding the body for 9 months, she's like, I don't want this anymore. Drops it in a ditch for 3 months.
Yeah, we don't know. So, the body was covered by a quilt and a sleeping bag. She was between 5'5 and 5'7 and 110 to 130 pounds. She had reddish blonde or red hair, manicured nails, and really well cared for teeth. She was wearing a blue sweatshirt, t-shirts, Levi shorts, Victoria's Secret bra, expensive hiking boots, a diamond wedding ring, and a leather necklace with charms.
Hold on, how nice do your teeth have to be for people examining by be like, damn, she got some nice teeth though.
I mean, I would imagine that it's just, like, upper middle class to, like, above teeth care.
Hmm. She must have some damn nice teeth.
I'm sure she did when she was alive.
That's why I said did.
There was also an unopened ice bag with the words Glacier Party Ice on it. Which I could not find a brand that had that on it, but this is also not 1995. So it could have existed then.
Maybe.
So she would have been killed during the time after Rasmussen had gotten out of jail, but before he met Yoon Soon Jun. And we do know that he popped up in California when he met Yoon Soon Jun. So it's entirely possible that he could have been in that area at that time. So now we are back to where we started, to our three missing women. Rachel Garden, Lorene Ron, and Denise Ann Denault. We know that Rasmussen was in the area at the time they went missing, dating Denise Bowden before she went missing with her daughter. In fact, they lived only a few blocks from Denise Ann Denault. It was a small town, and so it's likely that they ran into each other at some point. But was Rasmussen responsible? For that, we need to actually consider Rasmussen's pattern. He would get into relationships with women, often to the point of meeting the parents, and then he would try to get them away from their family and friends. Once that occurred, they wouldn't be seen unless their remains were found. Lisa Bowden is an oddity in this pattern, since he kept her with him for a while. And when he was done with her, he didn't dispose of her. He just kind of walked away. Left her with a neighbor. Which is strange, because with other people's kids and his own kid, who he left with Marlise and her daughters, he just kind of dumped them in a barrel.
Hmm.
Like trash. But with Lisa Bowden, he left her with neighbors.
Who knows?
Rasmussen likely did have more victims, and they're even mentioned in this episode, because evil like his cannot be contained or satiated for long. Without knowing those victims, I'm not sure we have enough to say that we have a clear pattern. He is a chameleon in that sense. I think Denise Ann Denault best fits the kind of person he would target. A young mother was exactly his type. Even though he would take women with children, there hasn't really been any indication that he became fixated on younger girls the age of Rachel Garden and Lorene Ron. I just don't think we have enough to rule it out, though. Unfortunately, there isn't enough to say whether Rasmussen was involved in these three women's disappearances. Even if he was, the time period has passed for us to know. Police didn't put enough work in when it mattered, and they're gone. So what do I really think happened to Rachel Garden, Lorene Ron, and Denise Ann Denault? For Rachel Garden, I don't think she ran away. I do think her disappearance was suspicious, but I think someone else was responsible besides Rasmussen, and that person is already likely dead and will never serve time for their crimes. I feel the same way about Lorene Ron. Her disappearance was too elaborate and strange to be her conception, with weird unscrewed lights and different doors open and friends leaving at certain times, not knowing where she was, and all of that is just too complicated for a 14-year-old to plan and pull off without somehow being sentimental about it. Denise Ann Denault is the hardest for me to answer. I don't think she disappeared willingly, but I can't count out Rasmussen easily. Something definitely went wrong, and it's unlikely we will ever know what. Whatever the cause, there is a clear pattern. None of these women's cases were taken seriously by the police until much later. They were categorized, and their cases were labeled as non-important before the missing persons report even dried. Even if none of them are found, there are lessons to be learned from what happened. Officers in big cities are trained to think differently now about how children are to be looked for. But that may never change these patterns from happening. We must simply keep our eyes out and keep watch over those who have power. There is a phrase that translates to "who guards the guards," written originally by a first century satiricist and poet named Juvenal. It's "quis custodiet ipsos custodes." And its intention is to question who is responsible for keeping those in power from going against the rules.
It sounds like you were trying to summon a demon.
The answer at this moment in time is that the court of public opinion is the only ones that can prevent police from ignoring people, basically. We just have to remember to actually look for it. And that, my friends, is the rabbit hole of my one missing persons case, which turned into a two-part series with many potential victims. I suppose I shouldn't be surprised that this happened and should expect it to occur again, but I wish there were more answers at the end of this rabbit hole.
There are never enough answers.
No. Especially not with the stuff I picked to cover.
No, you masochist.
I know. Yeah.
I think that was your shortest story in a long time.
I know.
Well, shortest half story, I guess.
Yeah. I know. All right. Should we end it out so everyone can get back to enjoying their Christmas?
Go ahead.
You can check us out on our different social medias.
At Pen and Purgatory on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
You can send us an email of true or fictional scary stories for us to potentially read on one of our episodes.
At penandpurgatory@gmail.com.
You can also just send us an email to say hi. That'd be cool.
Or too. Anything. Pictures of your pets.
No dick pics.
Please no. But duck pics, we'll take those.
Quack, quack. You should rate us on Apple Podcasts and Facebook?
Yes.
Woo!
We've done this for how long now and you still barely get it?
I know. I need to, like, write this shit out sometime. Just have it, like, pasted on the wall. Of, like, this is what they need to rate things on. Have a happy holidays. Take time to rest for yourself. Take a break. It's been a hard year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Make sure to take time for yourself.
Breathe.
Breathe. We survived.
Time I mean, to... for us, there's still quite a bit of time left in the year.
Yes. God did not wake you up this morning to be a weak-ass bitch.
I'm the one who showed you that.
I don't know. Then you can say it next time. Okay, alright. Before we dissolve into being fucking 12-year-olds, have a good Christmas or holiday, whatever you celebrate or don't celebrate. Be safe.
Don't get kidnapped by a giant troll / ogre.
Yeah, don't do that. Bye.
Don't let door slammer keep you from sleeping.
Basically, just don't have kids.
Yes, don't have kids.
Or do. Your choice.
Well, that's all we have for you.
Have a good holiday.
Bye.
Bye.